You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
As the outside chaos swirled around the Indiana Pacers, they took on the Atlanta Hawks at home Thursday evening. The 11-20 home record, one of the worst in the league, worst in franchise history. They tried to bounce back after last night's loss to the Sacramento Kings, and bounce back they did. The Pacers got off to a great start in this game offensively, scoring 35-plus points in three straight quarters, got to a 10-point lead in the first quarter, 14 points at the end of the half, and 14 at the end of the third. The Hawks did claw their way back, but the Pacers pulled this one out, led partially by Domantas Sabonis' 30 points, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds. Caris LeVert's 31 points, 12 assists, and 3 rebounds. And off the bench, TJ McConnell had 19 points and 4 steals. The Hawks were led by Trae Young's 30 points, Bogdan Bogdanovic's 28, and John Collins' 25. But the Pacers defeat the Atlanta Hawks, the Nate McMillan-led Atlanta Hawks, 133-126. Welcome in to the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm the host of this wonderful podcast. And on today's show, I will talk about Jake Fisher's bomb-filled, scoop-filled Bleacher Report article. But first, I gotta start with tonight's game and what is a huge bounce-back win for the Pacers to, I don't know, keep their 9-seed hopes alive is probably where we're at right now. I guess, technically, it keeps them in the conversation for the 8-seed. They're only one game back of Charlotte, but keeps the team in the 9 spot. If they lost tonight, they'd be tied with the Wizards, and obviously they don't own the tiebreaker, so they'd be technically the 10-seeded team. They take on Washington Saturday in what will surely be probably the game that decides the 9-10 matchup, although I guess the Pacers could win if they lose their last, they'll come in for that game with 5 games, they would fall out. But like for all intents and purposes, that game is going to be pretty important because it will be whether it separates Pacers by a game and a half or they're basically down to the Wizards for that 9-10 spot. It was a good game for the Pacers. I mean, this was a game where, I'm going to be honest, coming in, I thought, oh, this is like the kind of game. It would almost be symbolic for them to lose to Nate McMillan's Hawks, then Bjork can get fired, and that be it. But they bounced back in a good way. They came out playing really well. They shot just really well tonight. I mean, they shot 62% from the field. They weren't great. I mean, they were good enough from 3, 8 of 20. But they just, they moved the ball well. They had 35 assists, which is compared to Atlanta's 27 as a comparison. They played like a team. I mean, so this is a game where they had no Brogdon, no Turner, obviously no Warren. Talk about him a little bit later and why that article was a little bit misleading about Warren, or at least it seems that way. But without those three guys, the team, you know, had O'Shea Brissett fill in the starting lineup with McDermott and Aaron Holiday. And all, I mean, basically everybody top down from this roster played well tonight. And you may kiss Goga didn't. Goga obviously had that skirmish with Greg Foster yesterday. I saw a joke. I'll give iPacer blog, I don't know who tweeted them, the credit, but it was like, maybe Greg Foster was the issue with this Pacers defense or Pacers team. I doubt that's true. But they bounced back well, and you could see it in the postgame pressers where there are quotes galore from Caris LeVert and Nate Bjorkman just about enjoying the win in the moment and trying to bounce back and not let, you know, the outside world crush them. And I part of me hopes that this is like those articles serve as sort of a bounce back for the team. They're able to like almost like everybody against the world kind of mentality, us against the world mentality, sorry. But I doubt that. But they played really well tonight. This was the kind of game that, you know, before all the chaos, it's like this is the kind of game the Pacers need to have against a decent team. The Hawks are a good team. They're the 4-5 seed right now, battling it out with the Knicks. And, you know, this was the kind of game they would have against a Hawks team before this season where they would, or I mean, against a Hawks-level team, like any team that's, like, not on the elite level, but in that next tier, they'd play these teams tough, but they'd win them close, and it would be a good game, and they'd have exciting moments. I mean, McConnell was amazing tonight with his steals. Saw some J. Michael, but, like, there's no way he shouldn't be sixth man of the year candidate, maybe borderline all defense, one of the two teams. He's been so good for this Pacer team this year and playing way, way above his pay grade. He makes $3 million, but way above what I thought he could ever be. Just after watching the playoffs, I kind of was down on McConnell. LeVert really starting to show his own offensively. Sabonis is starting to really fit in this way. I mean, I think when you put Sabonis alone center and then have him play with next to a four, all of a sudden things look much better for him because he gets to play true center on defense, so he's not exhausted. And on offense, he gets to play five out with him as like kind of the point center. But really, really good game for the Pacers. And it's really unfortunate all the other stuff going on around them because it sort of dampens this win and shows really, you know, this is a good win. Like I said, it keeps them alive for that six seed or for that eight seed, which is important because there's a real difference between playing in the 7-8 game versus playing in the 9-10 game because it means you have two shots at making the playoffs. Also, if you manage to win the 7-8 game, you're the seven seed. And I think right now Brooklyn is still the seven seed. They have not looked that good recently. Now James Harden should return theoretically, but like Brooklyn could be semi-vulnerable or at least to like a six-game series. I think Milwaukee will probably end up catching Brooklyn if they keep falling. Brooklyn's lost four in a row. Milwaukee went 1-4 in a row, so there's a pretty good chance that happens. They're only half a game separating the two of them. But, yeah, I mean, this just kind of keeps the Pacers, like, top eight hope alive. And if, you know, theoretically, if they won in the last five games, got to a top eight seed, won the first play-in game, and then took a first-round series six or seven games, that might save Bjorkman's job because the way it looks right now, Bjorkman is going to be out of a job sooner than later because of all the reports swarming, and that's what I want to talk about next. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Football's over, college basketball's over, but baseball is in full swing, and you can track all the action on BetOnline. This week has tons of sports action. Think of everything you can think of with NBA, with NHL, with baseball. Get the latest news and odds for all your sporting needs from BetOnline.ag. They have everything from MLB, NBA, NHL, and even some UFC MMA action. So before the next pitch, head over to BetOnline.ag on your laptop or mobile device and check out all the great sporting news. Sign up for bonuses and contest information. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore as your chance to get in the game as teams prep for their playoff runs. Head over to the website, use mobile device, sign up today, and receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with the promo code LOCKEDON. That's LOCKEDON for 50% welcome bonus at betonline.ag, your online sports book experts. All right. So the big news of the day, I'm going to read the headline of the article because it's changed a few times, but inside the turbulent tenure of Indiana Pacers coach Nate Bjorkman by Jake Fisher. Very good story, I will say. TJ Warren disputes some pieces of it, but overall, really good insight to the Pacers. You don't see a lot of this. Takes a lot of inside sourcing. I might be teasing the article for some of its like minor issues, but as somebody who does have experience writing, you know, deep stories with well-sourced, this is actually a really good article. I mean, just to be able to pull something off like this without like really many people challenging its validity is tough. It's a tough thing to do. Anyways, so a ton of big nuggets in this story. The first one I'll hit is the one that kind of made it around on social media, and that is that TJ Warren asked for a trade when the Pacers hired Bjorkman because apparently they didn't consult with Warren at all. Asked for a trade because they didn't consult with him, but apparently they hired Bjorkman, who Warren has played for in the past. And apparently they didn't even ask Warren about Bjorkman. And I think the kind of 1+1=2 method was that Warren must not like Bjorkman. Eventually that was kind of changed after Warren went on Twitter and said that's not true. He said in a funny tweet, like, there's some stupid shit on this app some days. Now, he didn't cuss that, but it was somewhere in those lines. I cussed for him there. So then they changed it to sources or players believe that Warren asked for a trade. He probably had, it seems like there was a source somewhere that was like, yeah, Warren asked for a trade. He didn't actually ask Warren about it, which is probably not the best move, but I get it. And we don't really know. I mean, I guess Warren's agent could have done it. I mean, a lot of things happen when you're with an agent and they say things in the heat of a meeting or whatever, even though maybe Warren doesn't mean it in some way. But that was interesting to me. But what's more interesting about the whole Warren thing was the fact that they did not consult with him before the hire. And this is kind of, I think, and it's kind of a theme of this whole article, is that Bjorkman was one kind of person during an interview and a different kind of person as a coach. And there's some problems here in general with the Pacers hiring process because of COVID, right? They probably didn't get the same in-depth, in-person, run-through-the-ringer type of interview you would get if you had had in-person interviews, didn't have COVID, right? It probably screwed the hell out of that process. The fact was they were sort of took their time on it too, and they were kind of down to just a few candidates, and other teams had already kind of filled up, I think, by the time they just hired Bjorkgren. And they were desperate, looking for like the next Nick Nurse. That was like apparently a big thing. And so I just wonder if he was able to sort of be one person on Zoom and then be a different person in the locker room, right? And at the same time, though, like we've seen Bjorkgren during the first eight games, players were loving it and people loved the training camp. And it weighed on them, I think, as the team wasn't very good. I don't know if I blame Bjorkgren for all the team's problems. I mean, they probably should be above 500 team if the coaching was better, but I'm not sure who could. I mean, it's hard, especially considering the injuries and whatnot, to get to that point. They lost their third best player overall in TJ Warren, with like, you know, three games in. And it doesn't seem like Warren, like I said, is denying that he had season injury on to play for Bjorkgren. I don't know. I guess we'll see if he asks for a trade in the summer, but it doesn't really seem that way right now. That's really true. But it's interesting. I mean, the other interesting thing about Bjorkgren, a little piece of this article I thought kind of was interesting, was the fact that he basically kind of ran Bill Baino off the coaching staff. We haven't really seen anybody challenge that. The quote that I liked from this one especially is, he's just very different, speaking of Bjorkgren. He said, one, leads that he worked previously with Bjorkgren. He's not a dick, just completely out of his element as a leader. He didn't come in relationship building in an easy way from day one, and said one Pacers voice. So that's interesting. I think what it shows, and maybe it's just he's out of his league of being a head coach. You know, he seemed like he was a good assistant. He really worked well with Nurse, and some people are better at being number twos than number ones. It's just the way it is. You know, I think there's a lot of things you give Bjorkman the benefit of the doubt for this season because of injuries, because of COVID, because of the trades, because of everything. It certainly has not been an easy year, even if you had the perfect coach. So you're getting the benefit down on that end. But I do think there is something. It feels like this team has not looked happy playing. They look better tonight, but they haven't looked happy. They've looked exhausted at times. Things haven't looked good for this team. And it's been like, you know, we're 60 or 70 something. We're 66 games in. And the team is definitely underachieving. Definitely should be a better team than they are right now. And coaching is some to blame, but I don't think there's the only thing to blame, right? I mean, someone in the front office thought Bjorkgren was good enough to be a coach. I'm not, you know, at some point that has to be part of it. Nate McMillan has been really good for the Hawks, and you know, I know that it kind of like they had to get rid of McMillan, but it seems like McMillan is a better coach than Bjorkgren, just like on the surface it feels that way. And it's just, I don't know. I think it feels like everything is setting up to sort of blame Bjorkgren for this whole thing at the end of the season. And I'm not sure he's all to blame. And that's what I want to talk about next. I don't think Bjorkgren is the only one to blame for the Pacers' lack of success this season. But first, today's Locked On Pacers podcast is also brought to you by our wonderful friends over at Built Bar. What is your favorite Built Bar flavor? Do you know Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors plus the occasional limited time one? When you talk to Built Bar, to a fan, they're definitely passionate about their faves. If you don't know the Built Bar faves, well, you're missing out. My favorite one of their 9 favorite kind of delicious flavors is the peanut butter brownie one. But there's something for everyone. You can get mint brownie, raspberry, coconut, all kinds of flavors. And if you haven't tried some of them, you can get a mixed box today. We get 2 of each of the 9 flavors. It's 18 protein bars, which these things are great. They're healthy, great for trying to maintain or lose weight. They're all high in protein. They're decently low in calories. My favorite one, the peanut butter brownie, has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories. And if you order today, you can get the raspberry mint brownie or whatever you like, any kind of them, on BuiltBar.com. They have a Mother's Day offer right now. Right, for Mother's Day, you can send your mom Built Bars and go to BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKED15. That's LOCKED15. You get 15% off your next order. For Mother's Day, for whenever, go to BuiltBar.com, promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off your next order at Built Bar. So how much is Bjorkgren to blame for everything that's going on? It feels like he's being set up to be the fall guy. I mean, we have the Woj report that he might be fired. You got this whole report, which is like clearly sourced by a bunch of different players and whatnot. People aren't happy. The team's not winning. That's why people weren't happy, right? This is a Pacers franchise that, despite it not being like a championship caliber team, wins a lot of games, plays a lot of fun basketball, competes, and ultimately loses when it matters most, but competes, right? I mean, take the last like 3 or 4 years. They win, what, 42 and 45 and 45 last year, or 48 and 48, and then on pace to win like 15 games. And they play with good teams, and they play hard, and they're just like, at the end of the day, they might not win the big ones, but they're always there. They're competing and stuff like that, and they're not this year. They're not really even close. Like, tonight's game against the Hawks is more the exception than the rule. They're losing to not just the good teams, but to the mediocre teams, and then they're barely beating the bad teams. So it's a totally different season than it's been for really any Pacers team in the last five, really since 2009, since the Jim O'Brien era, right? And so at some point, right, Bjorkgren was hired by two certain GM/presidents. And certainly they have done a decent job building this team. Don't get me wrong. It's a talented team. They've done okay in the draft. Sure, they've had misses, but who hasn't? They haven't picked high. They've succeeded in that. They found some talent in Sumner and in Goga probably and O'Shea, right? And that's what your job as GM. And they've also signed well, right? I would say three of the four off seasons that Pritchard has had, he's been successful. I mean, even the one I thought he hasn't done that well, which was probably the Tyree Evans one, he still got the best value for what he could. But like, going to get Warren's a big get. Same with Brogdon. Being able to re-sign both Sabonis and Turner on decent, reasonable deals has been valuable to them. Getting the most out of the Vic trade. But like, part of it, Vic being unhappy, just tanked the season from the beginning, no matter who was in charge, right? Vic put on a brave face. He played pretty well. But ultimately, that hung over this team, and it hung over their first 12 games. It's probably actually their best stretch to the team. And maybe there's something to that. But it hung over this team like a... And played an important factor in, I think, ultimately setting this team back, right? It's not just they made the Vic trade, which sort of, I think, provided relief. But then it was the fact that the guy they traded for, like, wasn't ready to play because he had cancer, unfortunately, right? The Pacers general manager and front office, rightly in my opinion, chose to have short-term pain of not having that third option, because by that point we knew Warren was hurt, you know, and not having Vic. Because they thought the value of having Karis in the long was better than the short, than the, you know, the 30 to 40 games he had of Vic. And it probably was the right move. I'm not doubting that. But to be like, oh, we chose short-term pain over a long-term game and then be surprised about the short-term pain is kind of disingenuous, right? I mean, I think you have to understand that this team was going to be bad. They were just going to be bad because they did not have the talent, right? When you're starting Doug McDermott and Justin Holiday, then you're starting two centers, which almost like only works when you have the ideal lineup in the first place. Of course things were going to go well, right? I mean, this Pacer team was designed for things to be perfect, right? If everybody's healthy, all at the right moments, and even if you make the, you know, swap Vic for Karis, whatever, if that team is 100% healthy, maybe it works. You're still on an outside looking in because, like, I'm not sure the two centers can work. But, like, maybe it will work because there's enough shooting, enough offense for the two centers to be out there, and there's enough decent defense from the guards to make it work and whatnot. But like, when you take that perfect scenario away, it's really easy to see that the kind of the underlying infrastructure was just crumbling, right? And I don't think there's anybody really to blame for that, right? I mean, there's a lot of, you know, when you don't have a number one superstar who can kind of, you know, basically cover over all the cracks when things are going bad. I think a good example is James Harden in really every team he's been on, right? In Houston, doesn't matter what team you have with him, he puts up 28-8-8, and he wins you a bunch of games. In Brooklyn, same way, right? They didn't have Kyrie for a while. They didn't have Durant because of injury and whatnot, and didn't really matter because James Harden was that good. LeBron does this. Steph Curry's doing it this year a little bit. I mean, not to like the greatest extent, but he's still doing a pretty good job this year considering all the injuries they've had and how that team is so badly constructed. I mean, the best players can kind of deal with a bad situation with injuries and stuff like that and make it work. But they just don't have a player like this year. There's nobody on the roster who has even touches the top 10 in the league, not even top 15, maybe top 25, Sabonis is, maybe. But, like, they don't really have a player like that, so it's really hard when you know, you start to see all kinds of injuries and cracks in the foundation for it to fall apart. Certainly, Brooklyn hasn't been great. Like I said before, he clearly makes people mad, is tough on them, push them too hard. The micromanagement thing seems to be an issue. But, like, you can't tell me if this team was just a slightly healthier and won five or six more games, they wouldn't be talking about, oh, Mark Quinn's a micromanager, but like he just knows the X's and O's and he can really get it right, right? The difference between this article and one praising Bjorken for the same kind of style is six or seven wins, right? If the Pacers have won six other games, they are sitting at the four seed, and we're all sitting here like, wow, this team's overachieving despite all the injuries, right? And that's what McMillan was good at. McMillan, didn't matter who you threw out there, managed to get this team in the top five every single season. And maybe that's what makes him a great coach and is kind of the comparison to Bjorkgren, and maybe that's where we're going to fall short because he has to be compared to McMillan, who, despite all his flaws, was that kind of coach. But this was just a bad year. I mean, this was a year the Pacers had kind of given up on. And I said this earlier this season, and I think a bunch of people got mad, but they totally decided that by going through the Karras trade, that they were willing to take a short-term suffering. Because if they had kept Vic, this team probably doesn't lose all the games they lost in February and March, right? I mean, you go through the stretches. I'm going to pull up the schedule real fast just to make sure I have this right and remember. But like, so Vic gets traded, and the team, I believe, goes 8-4 the night after Vic leaves, right? So that's January 14th. Karras doesn't come. I believe Karras doesn't play until the Phoenix game on March 13th, right? So the team was 8-4 that before, you know, when Vic left. They're 17-20. That means over that stretch, they go 9-16. If Vic is playing in all those games, they probably don't lose, you know, that 5 of 6, which loses to Chicago and Golden State and Boston and New York and Philadelphia. All games that were close, they could have easily won. They could have won Golden State, Boston, or New York. All three were tight games. You know, this team probably, by that March record, is 20-17, right? So, and it makes sense, right? You lost a player of Vic's caliber, and he could have got hurt, so who knows? And then you didn't replace him with anybody. Like, I don't think Karras was on peak Vic's level, but Karras is 80%. Karras of today now is 80% of where Vic was, 75%, whatever you want to call it. And if you have that with the roster they had, then it's fine, right? If Warren had not gotten hurt, this team probably again is 20-17 at that point, because last year that's what Warren did. He filled in for the injured Vic and played extremely well, better than maybe Vic at times has been since post-injury, definitely probably better than Vic was post-injury. So part of me is like, do you give Bjorkman a little bit of a break for all these issues? You know, that's McMillan's biggest thing, is like, McMillan lost the locker room, I guess they said, but like, he never got an effing healthy roster in the playoffs. It didn't matter where he went. The one year he had a healthy playoff roster, and the team almost beat the eventual Eastern Conference champions. They were like 3 minutes away from doing it. And certainly, the game, I don't think he coached that well. I think he should have played Oladipo the whole second half. Oladipo was so good in that series. He should have just rode him that game 7 because it was do or die, and he didn't. He didn't take advantage of LeBron cramps when he should have. Whatever. He had a healthy playoff roster for basically one season, and he maximized it to the extent. If the Pacers didn't draw the Cavs in that first round series, he probably wins a playoff series. The next 2 years, certainly they blew it, but didn't have Vic 1 year, didn't have Sabonis. And those are two really important players. Those are the one and two most important offensive players on the Pacers team at those points. So, like, should he got a break for that? Probably. So, I don't know. I mean, I sometimes think all these reports and whatnot are just somebody trying to get him fired, and maybe he isn't ready to be head coach. Bjorkgren isn't. Maybe. Maybe he isn't, but like, I don't know if he's to blame for all the Pacers' problems this season. They've had a lot of things have gone wrong all at one time, and I don't think Bjorkgren hasn't made them better, but I'm not sure what coach would have actually succeeded. And that's what I think needs to be the most. It's like, certainly Bjorkgren hasn't been like otherworldly, oh, he's a great test coach who can thrive in the most, you know, treacherous situations. Certainly he's not that coach. But, like, is he really to blame for all the problems? Or is it, like, 7 other things that all went wrong all at the same time that have just kind of tanked him? I think it's the former. That's just my opinion. As always, you can follow us Locked On Pacers Podcast at Locked On Pacers on Twitter. Follow me at Freeman. I'm 5 and co-host Tony's at Teased NBA. Tony and I did a Locker Room, which I believe you can listen to because Tony did record it on Locker Room app. We'll also be back on Monday with our weekly show, and I'm sure we will do a deep dive into all this stuff as we keep kind of seeing more. I wouldn't be surprised if there's more reports coming out soon, but we're heading towards the end of the season. There'll be some playing games, but it's looking like we're heading towards probably a coach being fired and a lottery chance. So we'll see what happens, but that's all I got for this Locked On Pacers Podcast. As always, we're here 5 weeks. We'll see you guys on Monday.